Can everyone hear me if the mic's here, is that okay? I guess I don't need this PowerPoint anymore. But I'm gonna kind of go through it using AutoCAD map and doing some map book production. One of the things we run into a lot when we talk to people is the whole bit, we have a lot of AutoCAD data, we have a lot of AutoCAD base maps, we have a lot of GIS data that's in shape files, it's in personal GIS databases. And once again, it's that sharing and grabbing. And historically, it's kind of been going along the lines of the progression had been now AutoCAD can actually read the shape files and read stuff and bring it into the AutoCAD drawing file. But at that point in time, you were kind of disconnected from the source data itself. And so I don't know, how many people are running AutoCAD 2008, the latest version? How many of you have map? Not just plain AutoCAD. So are you familiar or using the FDO connector, what they call the feature data object connector?
Nope.
This is a new way of doing data connection that AutoCAD came out with in 2007, where it actually does a live connect to the data source without doing an import. It just reads it live and brings it into the drawing. And so what I wanted to do is, a lot of people I've seen are not familiar with this, and they're kind of surprised by the power that's there with this data connection. And so to kind of go through, we're seeing more and more people that are looking at, how do I do map book production? I got to get some stuff out. I got to get the field books out. I got to get all sorts of stuff done. I have a lot of really good data, but it's in different formats. And how can I quickly update, looking at source data without going through tons of steps and tons of processes every single time I need to update my map books? And so this is, I'm going to kind of go through a quick little process on how you can do that with AutoCAD map using some of the plot map set. Has anyone ever done a plot map set in AutoCAD? Someone? Does anyone know that that function has been in AutoCAD for about four releases? Does anyone care about map books? Okay. All right. Map books are, so if you have a grid going across your whole base map data set, being able to print out here is grid A1, A2, A3, A4, and being able to, with basically the push of a button, be able to print those things out, or what we're finding very, very popular now is printing out either PDF or DWF to be able to kind of, what we're seeing, a lot of guys, I want field books, but this guy over here wants paper. Someone over here wants to be electronic, but the connection for the notebook isn't good enough. How can we kind of give everyone what they need? Where they have the paper map books out in the field from the data, but also if someone has a notebook, being able to have all those electronically so they can grab if they don't want to take the paper out of them. So what this actually does is it kind of bridges that gap. How many people use DWF or TWIF? I need some help here, man, big time. Do you know what DWF is? Drawing web format. It's kind of AutoCAD version of a PDF where they take the drawing files, you can send them to people, they can redline, they can mark them with a free viewer and send them back, and any changes, anything noted, comes back into AutoCAD, geo-reference where it needs to be. You can connect the GPS units to a DWF viewer, and it'll actually mark where you're going out in the field. Does it sound cruel to anyone?
Yes.
How late were you up? So there's several technologies here. DWF is actually something you should start looking at if you're sharing data with anyone, because it shares it secure. They can't change it, can't edit it, can't do anything to it, but they have layer control, they have block information, you can have object data information in it, you can take the connected geodatabases, connected shape files, and when you write it out to DWF, it'll actually attach and embed the data from a geodatabase or from a shape file in that as you send it out to people. So it's very powerful. Not enough people know about it, so it's part of the reason I wanted to kind of talk about that. So what the map book does is be able to say, here's a grid of 150, 170 map pages. What it'll actually do is make a layout tab for each map page in your AutoCAD drawing that you can then publish and write out in one fell swoop. Here are all of the files that we have. We're finding a lot of support with this within agencies where they don't want to have to print out a whole new map book. All I need is page H12. And so they put these files on the server. If someone messes up a page or does something, they can actually print just that one page, slip it back in their MacBook, and they're ready to go. So all of those things are there and done. I don't think enough people know about it, so that's why I wanted to talk about it today. So I'm going to start out a couple different things. This is, I have it called my MacBook Master. This drawing actually has nothing in it. Is everyone familiar with querying data in, attaching a drawing, and doing a query of data? There we go, excellent. Okay, so what I have in here right now is, this is a grid area, has some annotations. All of this information, the annotations, is everyone familiar with the Display Manager too that AutoCAD has? The new way of being able to bring data in and display it and show what's going on with it. It's called a Display Manager. So I'll show you how I set this up. If I go into the properties here, I have, everyone familiar with this, the Map Explorer, where you attach a drawing in AutoCAD so you can do query from a remote data source. So on this one, I have two drawings that I've attached. I have a MacBook drawing, which is my, or the grid, and then I have a sewer drawing, which is the infrastructure that I'm going to need to now mix and match with some of the cadastral data that we have from another source. And so what I've done here right now is this particular layer that I have, it is called the annotation layer. I said I want to bring in anything from the sewer drawing that is on these particular layers. So you can go in and you can see what's here, saying these are the layers that I want to bring in from that external drawing. I want to bring it into this working session. So the big thing here is to keep things current and quickly available. I have nothing in my MacBook Master. It goes out to the sewer drawing that says what's currently there. It goes out to the grid drawing and grabs at it. It goes out to the other data sources and brings it in and presents it live so that you don't have to say, oh crap, I forgot to get this, or so-and-so didn't. You connect to the source data, bring it in, and it's automatically updated, so you don't have to worry about that step. So in this particular instance, I have annotation data in here. I also have what I just call it, some miscellaneous features, which are some, you know, clean outs and blow offs, things like that. I have some laterals, I have manholes, I have the sewer grid. The sewer grid actually comes from the MacBook grid drawing. So you notice the properties here as you're going through very quickly updates. It's very easy to see this is all the stuff. And just to prove to you that I actually can't do stuff like this, if I select everything in this drawing and delete it right now. Maybe get the other delete. If I do this and then save the drawing, I can now close this, reopen it, and you'll notice down here it's activating the particular drawings and querying the stuff in. So this drawing is blank until I open it, at which time it then goes out and says, okay, I'm going to the sewer drawing, I'm going to grab this. I'm going each one of these display layers, you're able to then have it go out to the source drawing and bring it back in. So you also have the ability here, if I don't want to see the sewer grids, I can just turn that off. The nice part about this is there are three different layers associated with the sewer grids. I don't have to go into my layer manager and click, 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 or which one of this, or I forget. Very quick, very easy to do this kind of stuff. I'll add another one in here just so you get an idea of how it works. So you can either go to the data connect here and say add data to the drawing. This one I'm going to query a source drawing. The one thing you need to make sure you check beforehand is if I'm wanting to bring from the sewer drawing, is it an activated drawing? And you know, you do that by going in and right-clicking either activate or deactivate. If I wanted to bring something from the grid, I would bring this in and activate it. So make sure the drawing you want to pull information from is active and attached. You then come into the display manager and say, I want to add data from a source drawing. What I want to do is I know what layer my pipes are on. So I'm going to say I want to bring anything in on a layer of any of these PPLN layers, and then also there's a couple of force main layers that I want to bring in. So if I do that and draw that in, you now see that all of that information came in. So I can come in here now and I can name this anything I want. I'll call it sewer mains. I can change the display order by pulling this up and down within my display manager. Display manager is really, really cool. If you haven't messed with it, it is worth messing with. So now, just by clicking on sewer mains, it takes all of those layers that I added and treats them as a group, and it allows me to manipulate them and work them in my drawing. You can also do this with entities in an existing drawing, but this is what I wanted to show you, just how you can attach and move some things from there. The other thing you can do, I'm going to zoom in a little bit here, just so you can see a little bit of what's going on as far as a display manager standpoint. Let's say that you don't like the way, you're having to attach to my drawing to do some work, and you don't like the way I present the data. But you don't have the access to change it because it's my drawing and not yours, you're just wanting to look at it. You can come in here and add what's called a style. So if I want to do an entity style on this, I can go into the properties here, it'll bring that dialog box back up, and I can tell it that I want the layer, the color to be, this is all the standard stuff, bilayer. I can come in here and tell it the line type that I want. Let's say I want to do a line weight, and I'm going to say I want that to be 1.0. If I turn my line weights on now, you can see that it actually thickens them up. So this is what this is doing is taking the data that I have in the attached drawing, and it's displaying it differently based on what I tell it, regardless of how it's defined in the source drawing. So you can keep your own display mechanism that makes it the way you need to present it without doing anything with the source data. So once again, it gives you full control over the data that's actually someone else's without altering their data. Let's say I wanted to come in here and I want all of this stuff to be white. It's done. If I turn now, if I come back over here, and if I turn this one off, it goes back to its native display as I initially brought it in. So there's a lot of functionality. You may have, well, for one particular drawing, I want it to be this way, add another display style. You know, you can have multiple display styles, and for different projects, different maps, different productions, you can make the data look differently and just say, I want this one off, and I want that one on. Go. And these values are saved, so when it re-queries the data, and next time you open the drawing, it automatically makes everything look the way you have according to your style definition. So there's a whole lot of power in the display manager if you're going through this. And anyone can ask questions at any time, it's not a problem. The other thing I want to go through then is how to do the map book production. So the first thing you're going to need is what they call a template file. So I'm going to go in and grab my templates. So this is a template that I have, and the template is basically a way of saying this is the title block, the viewport, all the stuff that I want to have for my map production. What I have in here is there's a block in here, there's my title block. I also have a viewport, and I have some what they call adjacent page arrows. You're going to see this in a minute. Where if you come in here, you have attributes that will tell you, has anyone ever used the page set manager or the sheet set manager? Woo! Okay, we actually have someone that's done this. They actually have functions in there to say, for this particular sheet, this is my ID. This is where the map book production becomes very, very handy, because I know that this is the current grid I'm on. It also then has the ability to say who's above me, who's below me, who's here, and it'll tell you these are the adjoining pages of this map book production if you want to go there. So you set your title block up to automatically, in this instance, I put a logo in here, I have a scale bar in here, I have a section for notes. There's a sheet identifier down here in the bottom corner. There's also a sheet identifier right in the middle of this, and then what they call the adjacent pages will be notified and noted here. The other thing that we've done, when we do this for several different agencies, is when was this printed? How many times have you taken a map out in the field? It's like, I have no idea of when this was printed, or someone forgot to change the date. There's actually a system, you know, an attribute you can put in that if this is the date that it was actually plotted. So as you're writing these out to the DWFs or writing them out to the PDFs, it imprints on that file when this was last run, so you have an idea of, is this a week old or is this 9 years old? So the setup of the template is probably the most critical thing as far as what kind of scale do you want. Do you want 11.5 by 17? You want 8.5 by 11? You want 24 by 36? What sort of page format are you going to go on? That's very critical to come in here and define that. Then you set your page setup in here for the plotter you want, whether it be DWF or PDF or whatever you're, however you want to do the production. You set that up in this template file. This will then get inherited by the base map production we're going to do and put every single grid in this container and then populate all this other information. So this is the template file I have here. You'll notice there's a layout tab here of Mapbook 11 by 17. This is a block here, and the name of that is title block. So you can see that as I go through, all this stuff is going to be brought out as to the map production. So I can keep this drawing open, I can close it, I'll just keep it open in case we want to go back over to it. The other thing you need to define is, what is my grid? A lot of places have predefined grids. Some of them are looking at making them. There are ways of having AutoCAD automatically assign a grid. I tend to be a little bit more retentive than that, and I like to have control over my grid. So I will usually put in, this is my grid, this is how I want to do it. For this particular instance, this is a grid, and you notice there's an overlap between these. Map will automatically do a, you tell it I want a 5% overlap, a 10% overlap, a 0% overlap. This particular instance, they want it to be 5% overlap on the pages, but they wanted exactly a 1 to 200 scale. So what we actually did is we drew the rectangle for the area they wanted to be as part of the map grid, and then just offset them so that we then have the overlap defined by our grid instead of letting the map production do it. And I'll show you that in a minute. But each one of these has a piece of object data on it that tells it, this is my grid number, this is H6, or whatever it happens to be. So the object data then will be read by this to give it the page identifier and the adjacent page information that you'll see in the production itself when they're done. So to go through this, I'll grab an area like right around in here. To go into the map production then, so you have your display manager, you have your map book, you have your map explorer. So the Map Explorer is the one most people are familiar with. The Display Manager, more people are getting familiar with it. On the same thing, you have your map books. If there are any map books in the drawing, they'll be listed here. You can have multiple map books in a single drawing. So in order to make this work, I'm going to turn off everything but the grid, because I'm going to select my grid as a the selector for how I'm going to do the page generation. So if I come into my map book, I say, I want a new map book. And you can do it from settings, from a plot set. The easiest way I found, hands down, they had some stuff where there was an older way of doing it. You can migrate the settings in. You're going to see this is so fast and easy. You set up your template and you put your grid in place, you're pretty much done. So you say, I want to do a new map book. It's going to come up. You want to do it out of model space or out of the map display. I want to do it out of the map display because that's what I set my display manager up for. So whatever I have in my display manager is going to read that to do the map book templates. I can give it a name and I'll call this one test. Here we're going to do a small grid section right now. I don't really care what the name is. We can do anything with this. The settings is the important part. Now this is asking me for what is my template that I want to use for the whole production. And I come in here, and this is the template we have open right now that we were looking at a minute ago. So I say, that's the DWT I want to use. You notice it automatically filled in, I only had one layout. So it filled that in as the layout that we want to use as the basis for the plot settings and all the other page settings we did. It's asking you, do you want to include a title block or not? You don't have to. If you do, you check that on. And it reads, these are the different blocks that are in that particular template. So I want to use my map book title block as my title. And then the adjacent sheet arrows, if you want the adjacent sheet links, I have a block called adjacent page that I define to note where it is in relation to the current grid. The next thing I need to do is go in and say, what sort of tiling scheme do I want? Here's where you can say I can do it by area, where you can say I'm going to go from here to here, you break it up, let AutoCAD automatically calculate it. You can do the same thing here by number if you want to do this and say go from here to here and I want to be, you know, 5 by 9, whatever you want to do. So you can have it break it up. I almost always, like I said, I am very retentive. I do custom and I say I want to pick the stuff I want to do. So then it's asking you to select the tile with the grid you want. If I come in here, the center select these 9, so I have a center page with the full grid worked out. Come in here, and I want 0% overlap this time because I have the overlap predefined into my grids. Otherwise, I would have it, if I had edge-butted map pages, then I would say do a 5% overlap on each of those, and it automatically calculates the overlap on the map pages. So you go through here. The other thing you need to do then is, how are you going to name and number these grids? Well, object data is fabulous, so I can go in here now and say I'm going to grab the object data of the MacBook grid called grid ID, and I'm going to use that as my page identifier. So I go through here, and then I say generate. And what it will now do is it will go through and it will generate a layout for each of the grid pieces that I chose. So you see here it's test, because I said test, and then here's J7, K7. You also have all of these over here in your MacBook area. Now you have your pages, your grid pages, alphabetized. So what I'm going to do to make this look better, I'm going to go to my display manager. I don't care about my grid anymore because I don't want to see that. What I care about is my data, the sewer mains, manholes, laterals, and all the other stuff. So now I have all the information that I'm concerned about in the drawing. If I go back to my MacBook and say, let me go to that J7 grid. Now, the cool part about this, if I say zoom to tile, it'll actually zoom in model space to the area that is J7. So if I zoom to tile, it zooms right to the area in the map that is defined by J7. If I do the same thing and right click and say zoom to layout, it'll actually zoom to the layout page, and it has all the information in here. So you can see, here's the information. It filled in. J7 is the current map page. These are all the map pages around the edge. So, everyone seen hyperlinks in AutoCAD map?
Yes.
So you can do this now. If I say click, follow this, it actually jumped to that other map page. Now, notice the other thing here is we chose those 9 grids. J7 was the middle. We're now on I7. We had no grids on the left-hand side, therefore it's not populating an adjoining page because there is no adjoining page. So this is actually very intelligent as far as there's nothing there, it doesn't show up in the grid. But once again, you can move back and forth around these things just by panning and zooming. You now have the ability to print every single one of these as a map is done. So once the layout tabs are in, if I save this, next time I open it, it queries in the new data, the layouts are defined, I hit publish, and my entire MacBook is redone. We have agencies that have spent, you know, like, when's the last time you updated your MacBook?
9 years ago.
What is your mandate say you're supposed to do? Quarterly. But they can't do it because it's too much of a pain. With this, you're ready to go. It is, I mean, this is finished and this is done. I can do all of the map. It takes about 2 minutes to run the entire 212 grid for this particular area. But the other thing I want to do is I'm going to show you a little bit more. This is sort of okay, but the other thing you look at is where's any reference information about anything? This is all pure AutoCAD stuff right now. I have my AutoCAD drawing. How do I get access to some of the more cadastral data? So what I'm going to do now is show you, I don't know, has anyone ever used this Data Connect? As far as Connect to Data, this is all the new FDO stuff. So same thing here. Last time I did data, add the drawing, and I did query a source drawing. So that's querying an attached AutoCAD drawing file. This time I'm actually going to go through and say Connect to Data. This is a new dialog box that came out with FDO, which is the feature data object. And let's say I want to add a shape connection. This shape connection is defined as, you know, this particular subdirectory, the shape folder. You can add single files by coming in here, or you can add folders by clicking on this. This one I've actually added the folder, so any shapefile that is in this subdirectory is now going to be available to me to add to my drawing, but it's not putting anything in my drawing. It's just saying, here is a representation of the source data. So it's not messing with the source data, it's just bringing it in on a live read. So as soon as I hit connect, I have, this is all the data that is out there as shapefiles. It even reads the PRJ files, so it knows what the projection is, doing all this kind of stuff. So if I want to bring in some easements, I want to bring in an edge of road, major and minor waterways, and say some railroads. I hit add the map, and it actually brought all that stuff into the map straight out of the shapefile. The other nice part about this is controlled as a single feature. You know, so if I want to take the map book stuff and put it down here, that moves as a group because I brought it in as a group. So you can control your layering and different things like that. So if I want my sewer mains on top of that, I want this stuff underneath it, it moves it. The display manager is actually quite cool when it comes to that. So let's go in here and I'm looking, okay, railroad tracks. That's sort of cool. But what I want to do is look at and show you how easy the display manager is to manipulate and change. Remember, this is working on a live connection to a shapefile. So if I come in here and I say, I want it to be a gray and I want the pattern to be gray. I hit OK. You know, you see it right there where it changed? So this is now railroad tracks. I'll actually zoom in here. So you can see that it redefined, now it looks like railroad tracks. If I come in here and I have my minor waterways, let me zoom out so you can see where they come in. I want the color on this to be different. Say I want it to be, I'll make it a dark blue so we can all, should be able to see it okay. Then I can also take my major waterways, make them dark blue, hit okay, and my map is now updating with the colors I want, the way I like it, how it looks. Once again, I can take and do anything to the display characteristics of the data, and I haven't done anything to the source information. I'm not making anyone angry. I'm not stepping on anyone's toes. All I'm doing is taking the data that someone else gave me, and I'm displaying it the way I like to display it. The other thing, I don't know if anyone knows this, if we come into the easements, really cool thing here, they have transparency. Anyone know AutoCAD had transparencies like this? So you have transparent solid fills? Is that news?
It's
new. Yes. Excellent. Okay. So they actually have transparencies here. How many people have ever had an aerial photo in the background and I have a polygon over the top and I want to be able to see through the stink and polygon to the aerial behind it? And you have to go with some absolutely hideous dot pattern hatch to be able. Transparencies are really cool for stuff like that. So know that that's there. That was added just this last release of AutoCAD.
Can you do it at the MapBook
JPL? Pardon? You'd have to do each one individually. You can't come in here and change the properties of the entire thing. But any one of these things, I could come into my waterways. So anything in here, I could come in here and I could say, I want you to be, you know, 20% transparent. I want you to be 80% transparent. If I do that, you now see how the water right there changed. Just slide this over a little bit. So there's my transparency on my water versus coming in here, and you notice how I actually change the display in here versus if I take that to zero and say go. So you can see that it's actually a really cool feature of Display Manager that a lot of people aren't aware of. So I have a lot of this information in here. The other thing I want to show you, this is actually really, really cool because this is one of the newest things they have. I want to do a different data connect this time, and I want to go to Personal GeoDatabase. So for this one, this is where my geodatabase is. It's a complete parcel land-based geodatabase. So if I can actually paste, it'll look better. Oh, I closed it, that was excellent. So I'm going to take the location of where my geodatabase is, come over here and I'm going to paste that in. If you have credentials required on the database, you click log in here and it'll log you in. Otherwise, you hit connect. And what it's going to do is then read the schema. These are all of the different schema features in that entire personal geodatabase. So I'm going to bring the parcels in on this one and hit add the map. Now you notice there's also SDE connections in here. There's MySQL. There's standard ODBC. There's really, really cool stuff in here. FDO is a data connection technology, kind of like an ODBC type of thing, except two data sources. And this data provider is actually an open source data provider that Autodesk didn't even write. They have published the specs for FDO. And other people are now writing providers to different data sets. So this is going to continue to expand and continue to move as new data types are available, you know, have access through AutoCAD to some of these different data types. So here I have all of my parcels in here. If I'm going to come in here, I'm going to bring these down to the bottom here, let's say. And I'm going to change the color of them because I don't like that color. To make them yellowish. We'll do something like that. Say look a little bit better. So now if I go to one of my, like my J7, I can either go here or I go to my map book and say zoom to this particular layout. Now when it comes in here, that's a much better production. If I had aerial photos, the aerial photos can be in the background here. So this is map books. I save this with these layouts in here. Next time I open the drawing, all of the information in here will be re-queried when I open the drawing. So it'll go out to the source information and read, here's what's there. All you have to do is plot, because you're looking at the source data, therefore your map books are up to date. So we have a lot of agencies that are doing this now where we have actually a fire department that says they have reduced their response time. They actually respond quicker with these new map books because they can update them on a regular basis and they have better information. So this type of stuff is here. It's really cool. I think the fact that we're connecting to Shapefiles Live and GeoDatabases Live, we can connect to SDE as well as bringing in AutoCAD, as well as bringing stuff in out of databases, that's really, really kind of cool. So I can go through, if anyone cares, and do all, you know, 212 grids, but you know, it just take 2 minutes and you'd end up with 212 layout tabs. And then all you do is go into the publish and say, I want to publish the information that I have in here. Grab these things, send them out, and you're ready to go. Any questions? That's actually my time limit here, so I'm gonna be good and hold my half hour. Yes? Yes, you can. If you have the DEMs, it'll actually drape over those things now and do the exaggeration over it. There's some sample data sets that ship for the city of Reading with the latest version of map, and it has all of that information. You can actually drape over the top of the elevation models, drape your parcels over it, and then print them and do things that way also. So there has been a lot of enhancements in the display characteristic of AutoCAD in the last release, as well as the data connectivity to different sources. Yes?
Can you change any sheet files through this process, or do you still do that?
So once they're here, let's say you wanted to put on this particular page, you wanted to put a special note right in here. Knock yourself out. What the map book production does is it automates the process of, this is the view area I want, zoom to here, move to here, lock this in. Once this is done, you can do anything you want on your title block or anything in model space, any other notes you want to put in, special stuff, and it'll say, what it's going to do then is the only thing that will change is the data that you have attached here as a auxiliary source that will query in at the time. So you have full control over your layouts now, just like you do in any AutoCAD file.
Okay.
Did that answer the question?
Well, my question really was, can I adjust a parcel along with the pond and use the basin?
Yes, you can. So what you do is you would select this thing, you can check it out, you can make edits to it, and you can save it back. And you can actually edit shape files through AutoCAD now. There are more and more people that are starting to do that now too. So depending on where, there's a lot of places, you know what, we do that in GeoDatabase, it's going to be done. There's other places that I want to make a quick edit and I can save it back. So it reads it from its source, saves it back to its native source. So you can realize that, well, does it really matter? If I can edit fast with AutoCAD and you can edit fast with ArtView, who cares? We are saving, editing the same file format. The tool that you're using to do the editing is pretty much up to you. And so this is kind of expanding some of the cross-platform capability between the products. Any other questions? Thank you very much. I'll be over at our booth over here for a while. If you have any other questions during the break, you can come talk to us, or Alan Hardy, you're coming up. Alan Greg are over there too. Thank you very much.
Next up, from Kern County's office, is Assistant Assessor Tony Antolik. Well, I'm Assistant Assessor for Kern County, so my perspective is a little bit different than the drafting and mapping people, but hopefully you'll find some of this kind of interesting and give you a little perspective on your own offices as well. Over the last 25 years or so, Kern County population has basically doubled. But during that same period of time, the number of staff working at the assessor's office has actually decreased by 15%. And this is probably true for many of your counties out there as well. And the reason for this is, you know, I'd like to say it's because we work so much harder than those guys did 25 years ago, but the real reason is advances in technology. I'm going to go over some of our newer systems and then some of the other systems we have, and nothing I'm showing here isn't already in place in multiple counties and maybe in place in your county, but maybe you'll see a few ideas. For most counties, they start out with a mainframe property tax billing system, maybe something they shared with the tax collector and the auditor. We had something like that, and then 12 years ago, we spent millions upon millions of dollars and wrote a new system. Again, unfortunately, it was on the mainframe, and it's an integrated system with the auditor and the tax collector. Many counties now are at the point of rewriting their systems. San Diego County is the big one everybody talks. Is anyone from San Diego County here? So they're spending $40 million, is that the figure? What? Give or take a little. It's quite a project. It's an integrated system with their auditor and their tax collector, and it's a lot of money. We're hoping to... We've got some companies talking to us about converting our existing mainframe to a .NET client server system because we're really pretty happy with it and we're used to the business rules and how it operates. So that's where we're at with our converting our system. Here's our just a screen from our mainframe system, and if you don't have mainframe systems, they probably look very similar to that. We're also an assessor recorder's office, as are some other counties, and for us, the assessment process really begins at the recorder's office, where the deed is recorded and the change in ownership are recorded, and they're scanned into a document imaging system that's shared between the assessor and recorder. Really interesting technology that we're starting to use here in Kern County is this artificial intelligence to read documents, meaning reading deeds. And I know you guys have to read a deed here and there occasionally, so this might be kind of interesting to you. This technology is we're going to show is for the recorder, but we see other uses as well. So here's a typical grantee. You'll notice in a box up there in the middle of it is a barcode. And for computers, the thing they like to really read is something in a box, preferably a barcode. So that barcode in a box is the perfect thing a computer likes to read. But most of what's on a deed isn't something that a computer reads very easily, because the grantor or the grantee, they're buried somewhere in the text of the document. You've got to read for a valuable consideration, receipt of which is hereby acknowledged, and then you get to the grantor, and then they're a California partnership. You've got to hunt around for where do you mail the tax statements to them, what's the assessor parcel number, and what's the lot number and the tract number. All those things are not easy for a computer to read. So this AI index program is a automated indexing technology with artificial intelligent learning engine. That's something that Fender gave me, of course. We've deployed it this year, and it has learned to extract information from our official records. First of all, it uses OCR, optical character recognition, to read the whole document in. So it's a text file, basically. And then it's an expert system specifically developed to read deeds, and not just in Kern County, but other counties throughout the United States. And it learns through experience, and it learns specifically how does this county treat indexing the grantor and grantees, because different counties do it a little bit differently. And it builds a knowledge base, meaning an SQL Server database, on how it treats all these things. So what we did is we gave them 35,000 digitized images of deeds. And trust deeds and reconveyances. We start out with a limited set of document types for this AI index system to learn. We send it to the vendor. We send it also with the actual indexed information. This is how we index these documents. They ran it through their artificial intelligence system, and they sent back their knowledge base. And this is representing everything it's learned from those 35,000 documents we sent it. And what it does is, in Kern County, and as is most counties, you index it, but then somebody goes through and verifies it again. So, as this artificial intelligence system is running, any time a verifier sees that, oh, you didn't index that right, it keeps track of that and adds it to its knowledge base. And annually they go through and do a knowledge base update. And right now we're getting ready to do our first update. Again, it picks out the components, figures out who the grantor, the grantee is, those types of things. This has been used, like I said, all over the United States. I think 3 California counties are using it right now. Also, another thing that's coming down is redaction. There's a California law or two out there that they want to tell the recorders, okay, everywhere a Social Security number appears in any document, you got to black it out for the public so they can't see it. Well, that's a lot of work to go through every recorded document and find these things. But if you can teach a computer, this is what a Social Security number looks like, this is how it, where it kind of appears in a document, then a computer can do that for you. And so this is something that probably the recorders are all going to have to take on and do. And again, to do this redaction, you have to have all your recorded documents digitized, which even we are in the process of just finishing that process now. So right now, as it sits, the limited document set that's being indexed, 31% of all the recorded documents are perfectly indexed and verified with no mistakes whatsoever by this artificial intelligence program, which we think is pretty good for a first step. We haven't done the first knowledge base update yet. And they're mostly deeds, trust deeds, reconveyances. Future technology coming to the recorder's office. There's a lot of changes at our recorder's office. As you're probably aware, electronic recording regulations just passed last month. In fact, we're having a meeting next week. We're trying to put together a joint powers agreement for electronic reporting throughout the states, and there will be one internet portal for everybody that can file their documents electronically. So they won't bring them into the recorder's office. They'll file them basically over the internet through a VPN connection. We're completing our electronic conversion of our recorder's office, so everything is digitized, all the indexes, everything's in there. You can basically, when we're all done, put the recorder's office in a shoebox on a hard drive. Also, on that deed, there were things that the assessor wanted that the recorder doesn't really necessarily keep track of. You know, we'd like to know the billing address broken out by street number, street name, all that, so we don't have to type it in again. We'd like to know the legal description, the lot and track and all that. And the UPN off the document would be nice for booking purposes for us to assign the work to the correct title of the person. So those things are coming here within the next month or so. And having that information come over from the recorder already put into the computer so people don't have to type it in again, that'd be real slick for us. Right now, we're already getting the document number, document date, grantor, grantee automatically into our system. So it makes it nice for an integrated assessor recorder. Enough on the recorder stuff. Again, this is appraiser stuff, but you might find it interesting. Once a document gets worked by our title section, it goes into the computer, and the first thing it does is another computer looks at it. It says, oh, is this a single family sale? Well, let's look at the other single family sales and see if this sales price looks reasonable and things make sense. And if the computer thinks it looks reasonable and it makes sense, it enrolls the values, sets up the supplemental bills, and off it goes. And the appraiser never sees it. So very often, the whole thing is worked and done and ready to be billed within a week or two of when the deed records. Most of our sales are single family, and most of those get directly enrolled and don't even, the appraiser doesn't even see them. Another neat little program that we started using this year, we were doing our timesheets on paper, and we're probably one of the last people doing it that way, I don't know. It was an inexpensive browser-based timesheet program that the county has started using, and pretty much the whole county is on it. It allows you to define all sorts of work codes and reports and all sorts of stuff. Very flexible, and it posts all the information into our main thing payroll system, so it's been a real slick little program for us, and it was not very expensive at all. This is a little program that was written in an afternoon for the assessor's office. The appraisers are always out in the field, and where are they coming back? And they're out at Ridgecrest, and they'll be back, you know, 2 o'clock or whatever, or somebody else today or whatever. It's just a little in-out board written in PHP for people to check in and check out and see where people are at, so you can, especially the receptionist, can know where to send the calls to. The second program every county wrote after their property tax billing system was some sort of a single family characteristics program. This is pretty typical. Usually they're based on a state board cost handbook classifications, quality class. This one's got photographs, links to the sketches and maps and whatnot, but pretty similar to what I think most counties have. And then you guys, I don't know if you've ever seen, but the appraisers typically are using Apex to do their sketches. It's a kind of a drawing program specifically for appraisers, and we use it as well, and you can set it up to link to your other programs and have it somewhat integrated. Now that you guys have seen GIS every which way, I'm just going to comment on a couple things from the appraiser's standpoint. You know, we really like to know if a house is in a flood zone, or if what's the zoning, or what's the school district, and all that, or see a picture of it. It is really, here's a screenshot of our GIS system. Again, I think I have the flood zone, the parcels, and the 2006 aerials there. It has saved a lot of trips on our appraisers going out in the field to find something. It's a really handy little tool, and all that information at their fingertips is definitely a time saver. They're really relying on it now, so definitely a good thing if you can get it for your appraisers. And I think it's been discussed that I don't want to talk too much about switching off AutoCAD. We're switching to a GIS-based system for our parcels. A number of years ago, we bought a bunch of little eTrex Legend GPS units. You know, I think they sell for $100 now, but you can download maps into them if you get the map software off the internet. And they don't have very much memory, but you can stick all the sections in Kern County on it. And for appraisers, I mean, Kern County is thousands of square miles, and there's a lot of places that are in the middle of nowhere. So if you've ever driven out there, it's really hard to find where you're really at. So if you can know where you're at in the section, it's pretty handy. So they 4 or 5 years ago, we gave those to our rural appraisers, so they went out in the field, they could have this little handheld GPS and see what section they're in and where they're at in that section. Well, now what we're looking at, you know, we've got all these little PDAs with the integrated GPS in them. This is a little compact iPad. Of course, they run the PDA version of ArcGIS, and you can load the whole parcel set for any county in there, and it doesn't even come close to using up the space that's in the PDA. So now you can actually put the parcels on there, and you can put Apex sketching program and Excel, Word, PowerPoint, just about anything you want. This isn't something we've handed out for appraisers, but this is a really handy tool to show them where they're at on a parcel and finding the subject property, which is in Kern County a challenge many times to find the subject property. It's funny, I don't know if it's funny, not for the bank, I suppose. We had a court case. Every once in a while you find out that the assessor didn't have the property, that didn't have that house on the right parcel. And then with GIS and everything coming out, it becomes discovered that, oh, it's not on that parcel, it's on the other one. And when somebody gets a loan from the bank and the bank just assumes the assessor has the right house on the right parcel, and then they discover, oh, it's on this other parcel I own that's vacant, well, they just stop making payments on the loan. So it's creating some problems and some lawsuits and whatnot, but it's good that finally we're getting things on the right parcel. Yes?
So are you using it as far as like a read-only then?
Yeah, they're not.
They're not filling out all the property characteristics.
There is software to fill out the property characteristics and put it back into your system, and we've seen people demonstrate things like that, and that's something are thinking about as well, but it's not in place in our office. I don't know if anybody's got anything like that in place. Is anyone using these little PDAs or anything right now, as far as you know? I know you're... Okay. So this is kind of new stuff. I mean, they really weren't powerful enough to do all this just a few years ago. This is just interesting in that our commercial characteristics, we were one of the last big counties anyway to have a commercial characteristics database, and by the time we came out with it, the Appraisal Institute came out with their database standards, so we just based our commercial database on the Appraisal Institute standard, and it allows you to put as much or as little detail as you want. You can really go crazy with it. I don't know how many people have heard of the Business Property Statewide Portal. Has anybody? Yeah, this has been an interesting exercise. It's kind of serving as a model for a lot of other joint powers agreement. Your business section in your assessor's office, all your auditors, all the business property you tax, the machinery and equipment, and those types of things, people file 571 forms on those things. Historically, they've been in paper. Well, the counties got together, Orange County was the lead county, and put together an internet portal to allow everybody who's a participant, which is quite a few of the big counties and some of the smaller ones, they can file their annual 571 statement electronically on the internet, and the assessors can pull the information off electronically. We're having quite a bit of participation in this, and I expect this is the way things are going to go. And the interesting thing is the way that all the counties' assessors were able to get together, have somebody take the lead, develop this system, and it works, and it's out there, and people are filing their statements this way. We're hoping to use this as an example for the electronic reporting and, you know, other things, because we all do pretty much the same thing, and if we can get together and make it easy for the customer to have one place to file their information, it's a whole lot easier, one standard, and it's really worked out better than I could have ever imagined. As it's just our business property statement program, and everybody's probably got their own version of it, but little program for tracking mandatory audits, figuring out how to assign the auditors. You know, we got 5 audits in Texas. Okay, well, let's have this person do them, and so we don't have multiple trips out to Texas. Appeal tracking. We have a pretty detailed appeal tracking program. Tracks the status. Lets everyone who's working on the appeal put in their progress notes. Attach Excel files, scan documents, all those sorts of things. We're expecting a lot more appeals here in the next couple of years because of the downturn in the real estate market. The Board of Equalization gets sales tax information, and that's kind of a clue to us as to businesses that we're not catching and that we need to assess, and they send it on a disk, or I think we may get it off of FTP. This allows us to kind of go through what the Board of Equalization sends us and find people that we're not assessing. It's just a little program. Prop 58 tracking. Cost approach based on the cost approach that the State Board of Equalization publishes and on the internet. We just paste the data into a little program to do a quick calculation on costs. Boats. I think we're the only county that does this. You know, we assess boats and aircraft, and Price Digest publishes their boat information in a price guide, and they also publish it on CD. And so this automatically takes the make and the model and the engine and all that of the boat and assigns a value to the boat each year. And you know, there's thousands of boats, even in Kern County, that doesn't have any ocean. It's a big time saver, definitely. And we're hoping to do the same thing with aircraft, but they're not as good aircraft. Leasing, this tracks leasing companies, another business function. And Prop 8s, not every Prop 8 that gets applied for, in fact, right now most of them are getting rejected, but we like to track when somebody applied for a Prop 8, not just whether or not a Prop 8 was initiated. If the Prop 8 gets initiated, it goes into the mainframe system. If they just applied for it and you rejected, you kind of like to track what went on there. And so a little program for that. Just kind of a quick overview of what we're doing here at the Kern County Assessor's Office, technology wise. Any questions? Yes? You want us to tell the title companies how to write things? No. It's hard enough to get them to fill up, have the people fill up the P-Corps. No, we can't legally refuse a document if they have document standards that all the counties agree on, and there's this big book and they go by it. The program's pretty good at picking stuff out because it's reading the context of it, not where it's at. So it's looking at the text, not the location of it. And I think it's just going to get better and better, and as they get these things smarter, I think it'll really save us a lot of time. And save you, I don't know if every deed that goes through, if you have a pretty reliable legal description of what's going on, and if a computer understands these legal descriptions, it might be kind of useful. Something that tracks up and put in a database and refer to. Yes.
Is that program that reads your deeds, is that read a handwritten deed?
It will not read a handwritten deed. It's limited at this point to the technology of optical character recognition, and I guess it, OCR will read some handwritten, but they're not really good at handwritten right now. But as that technology improves to read handwriting, then this will just tag along with it. Because again, it's just taking that as text, and if they can pick it up as text, it'll read it. Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Tony. Okay, it is 5 to 10. We'll take a 20-minute break and get back at 10:15. Oh, also, if anybody can get a ticket for the door prize, show them to be fun. And we still have 4 of the pet folios left.